Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Hey, this is Jackie Road Studios and my name is Jack Post. Thank you for coming to the show. If it's your first time here, I sit down with guests, interview them, and after they've left, I take something from the interview and use it to write an original song that you'll hear at the episode. So there is a brand new song written and recorded at the other end of this episode. But my guest today, I'm so excited to have an actual musician in Jackie Road Studios for the first time. Matty O'Gorman is his name. He is the drummer of British India, who have had many top 10 albums in this country. They've been in the Triple J Hottest 100 several times. They were described earlier in their career as the hardest working band at the time, and they even supported the Rolling Stones. Matty is also an announcer on Triple M around the country, and as you'll hear from this interview, both his dad and his granddad were in the public eye and influenced both those career choices that Matty has a foot in. I met Matty through his work at Triple M because Triple M is in the same building as Hamish and Andy record their podcast every week. So I'd bump into Matty there. And people might know, if you have followed the trajectory of Release the Sounds, the band I made with Radio Mike, the video clip for our song Attached to String has Matty O'Gorman drumming in the video clip, though he did not supply the drums on the song. But to me, he did a very convincing job in the video clip of making it look like they were his drums. It was hard to choose. Here is one of my favorite British India songs. This is called Wrong Direction. From British India and Triple M, this is Matty O'Gorman in Jackie Road Studios. The song he has chosen as his intro song is one of my personal favourite songs. This is Blur, song 2. This is Jackie Road Studios. It's not my problem. Matty O'Gorman joins me in Jackie Road Studios.
Thanks for having me, man.
Man, I feel like I want to give you drumsticks. Like,
are there any drumsticks here?
There's drumsticks here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Fans of the Hamish and Andy show would know that I've got Hamish's electronic drum kit in Jackie Road Studios.
Oh, yeah, that's the one there, isn't it?
That's what that is.
Cool.
Not plugged in, or else I'd get you to, like, jam out on them. But I don't know how to, like, plug them into the whole Jackie Road setup.
I was going to say, like, if I leave, I would love to, like, leave a drum beat
for
a song for you to do.
Just
lay one down.
I would love to. You look how many wires this thing has. It's got, like, 50 wires coming out of the back of it. Yeah. Maybe you could just, like, drum on it acoustically.
We'll record the tapping on the sounds of the skin.
Yeah, and then I'm sure someone who listens to the podcast can turn that into, like, put in samples in there and make it into your drums.
I'd be down for that.
Oh, what a shame. I would have loved you to drum on the next song. Next time you come in, you can just keep those drumsticks in front of you. Next time we play a song, air drum away and it'll look cool for the video.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to drop them and it's going to make a bad sound. Stuff everything up.
Man, bad sounds is all what Jackie Road Studios is all about. All right, song 2. That's a great intro song. What is it? Why'd you choose that?
That was one of the first songs, and I'm sure you've got one too, that you heard on Rage growing up.
Back
in the early days where you used to watch Rage as a kid, and that was, I saw the video clip and it just blew me away. But the thing about Rage was it only used to have the name of the song and the band at the start of the song.
Yes.
So if you missed that,
Video Hits would give it to you both ends,
but both
Rage
ends,
would only give it to you at the start.
Only at the start. So if you missed it at the start, you didn't know what it was. So I only caught the end of it. I was just like, this has blown my mind, but I don't know what band this is. And of course, this is before you could look things up.
Yeah.
So I had to wait the whole week until next week in the hope that I could find out who this band and song were.
Ripping that song into the system, I watched the video clip again and it's so powerful. It's so good.
And it was one of those songs back in the day where I would talk to kids at school, like 11-year-old Matt. It was the first band where I felt like it was mine. and no one else knew about it.
Yeah.
You know, here I'm thinking, oh, this is just a small Australian band. No, they're the biggest band in the world at the time, Blur in the UK.
And they, did you know about this about Triple J? They used to use Blur Song 2 so often because there was local programming and then I think they had a national news.
Yes.
So the local person had to time out to exact time with the news. So if you're running out of time, that's a 2-minute song.
It's the perfect filler.
It's the perfect filler song. Yeah. Hey, I found this really cool thing actually with Song 2 of the guitarist Graham Coxon talking to this interviewer about how they made the song.
Cool.
Because how they came up with the song, he didn't have any lyrics for it, Damon Albarn. So he just sang in this like demo, he just sang gibberish in the corner of the room. And then that's what ended up becoming the lyrics on the song. So this is actually the lyrics ripped off this original recording. So you can hear the bleed of the band playing in the background. This is really cool. Oh, I'll stop it there as well. Just to say that you hear the interviewer and guitarist talking over the top of it a little bit.
Yeah. Nothing is. No. Woo-hoo! When I feel heavy metal.
Woo-hoo! And I'm pissed that I need a. A what?
Yeah. And I'm easy all of the time, and I'm never sure why I need you.
Please, I need you. I think that's so cool.
Graham's just nailing that one note. Yeah. He's so good, that's all he has to do. Just sit and play one note.
How important in songs are lyrics? Because something like that, you're right, it's such a powerful song. I've got such vivid memories of it as well because it was the song on FIFA 98.
And
I used to play that all the time. How important are lyrics?
Well, it can go either way. They're very important. I think for me back then, it was just about the sound that I connected to. Obviously not the lyrics. It was just like, I'd never heard anything like this before. And like you said, like it's just short and sharp and out. You're just like,
yeah,
what just happened?
And the video clip is actually them getting like blown in back into the walls of this room and stuff.
Yeah. So I think that's what hit me. And yeah, when you ask for a song, that is one of the vivid memories I have of being a kid, you know, just getting into music.
Yeah,
that just hit me. We should just do this about Song 2 Blur.
Yeah, we'll run out of time otherwise. Yeah. But can I play your other intro song? I asked you for one.
Yeah.
Song 2 was a late addition. Mm-hmm. The first one you chose, and then I was listening to this last night, and I was just having so much fun listening to it.
Yeah, cool.
Is Life is a Highway, Tom Cochran. Can we play
Let's do it as a second
intro song?
Go, my son.
There's two awesome things in this song. Well, I mean, it's just an awesome song. Before I ask you why you love it so much, this listen for this bit. I love that. Like, what? Like, that rising.
And the best thing about that is the video clip. You've never seen someone with so much energy go into a harmonica solo. He's sitting on a rock in the desert, just jamming away. And then the funny thing is, you picture Tom Cochran at this as a video clip. It's just like, all right, Tom, we're going to do it in 3, 2, 1. And you'd think someone would normally be like, oh my God, I'm about to kick into a harmonica solo in the video clip. There are all these people watching you. I'll just give it a go. He's just like, let's do it.
I was questioning actually watching the video clip to that as well.
Yeah.
Questioning whether he was really playing the guitar along with himself in that song, because it's got this like, it's got this pretty distinct rhythm where it goes dee, dee, dee,
yes.
Dee.
It's actually really hard to play on guitar.
And then, but he, in the video clip, he's just doing strum up, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
You throw him in the desert, man. There are no rules. You know what I mean? And he's foot stopping as well. It's a good time.
But I love that. I'm going to play it one more time because I love bits in songs when you like latch onto them and you wait the whole song to get to it. And you're like, I love this bit. Like this scream wail that he gives in the background of this bit. Yeah. I just love that so much. And then every song should have this that kind of breakdown where it just like all instruments rip out and then it's just drums and vocals. Yep.
it's just like, let's have a break when we play it live. Yeah. Hand the mic over to the crowd and just sit back.
Well, you know, I mean, in that scenario, you, as the drummer, you wouldn't get a break, but everybody else can take five.
I think the drummer would give it the one hand. The one hander there.
But do you do many drum tricks on stage like this? Spin the stick or anything like that?
No,
stand up and drum?
No shirt off, no tricks. That's just, it's not my jam.
More songs should have that. Why isn't that more popular? Rip out all the instruments and do the drums.
The breakdown?
Does British India ever do no instruments and drum part?
Yeah, we do. We definitely have breakdowns.
Yeah. I'm talking about rip every instrument out except the drums and vocals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've got bits in songs. All right. not as dramatic as that.
Yeah.
Maybe we will going forward. It seems to be a formula that works.
It's just such a good bit.
Yeah.
All right, tell me why you picked Life is a Highway.
Well, I think it's one of those nostalgic songs that bring back a lot of good memories. When we had British India had a studio around the corner in Preston, we were there for 6 years, and it was actually the end of the week song that we would play at the end of every week in the studio. So that was the last song we'd play, whether we're finishing up on a Wednesday because we're touring on Thursday, or a Thursday finishing up on a Friday.
Oh, that's so cool.
After finishing up in the studio, you'd play that and you'd be like, that's the end of the week.
Oh, that's awesome. So did you ever play it live on stage?
We never played it live. We just listened to it in the studio.
Oh, so you wouldn't play it live?
Wouldn't play it. We'd just listen to it. We'd just be like, okay, cool. It's the end of the week. Put on Tommy Cochran.
I can't believe you were listening to it every week and you never put the drum breakdown in.
Yeah, I know. Because it was always after the song we were doing.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, well, we're finished for the day. Like, yeah, exactly. Someone write that down. Remember that.
Remember that on Monday, and it would never happen.
That's so cool. So tell me about the studio, because I mean, we're in Coburg in Jackie Road Studios.
Yep.
Preston's just the next suburb over.
Mm-hmm.
When you make your own rehearsal studio, is it like 5 days a week, like 9 to 5, like got a clock on to band work today?
I think it's important to have a routine.
Yeah.
Especially when your weekends are kind of, you know, they could be anything depending on where you're going. I think it's good to have a structure. So we met up at the same time every day. I think it was 11 and we'd finish up at about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Just to have that structure during the week, because when you're a full-time musician and you don't have any structure, it's important because you'll just go crazy.
Yeah. So is there somebody then, like, I guess the radio equivalent is a producer who's like making sure that things are always getting done. It's like, all right, well, let's rehearse the next song and what let's write our set list today.
Yeah.
Who's doing that in the band?
I think all of us collectively were like that, just because, well, an example would be we'd finish every song we were writing. So we wouldn't leave a song kind of half finished. Otherwise you'd have, you know, 200 different half-finished songs.
Yeah.
So even if, you know, we were rehearsing a song and then recording it, we'd kind of follow whoever had the most vibe for it.
Mm.
Like, okay, cool. This person is really wanting to take the song in that direction. Let's go with him and see how it turns out.
That's cool, because I noticed, like, reading through the liner notes on the songs, you're one of those bands who does song was written by all four members of the band.
Yeah.
And I always think, like, whenever I see a band do that, I always think, well, someone's done the heavy lifting, surely, for each individual song, but everybody gets equal amount of credit.
Yeah, definitely.
Was there songs on there that you would say are your songs?
I think there are songs that people, like, Deck wrote most lyrics for every song. Like, I think Deck's the best lyricist in the country.
Yeah.
The same way I felt like Nick was the best guitarist and Will was looking after all of the production too.
Yeah.
So definitely songwriting for me earlier on.
Were you the best drummer because everybody else is the best at them? Are you the best drummer in
Australia? I don't know. But definitely, like, songwriting for me earlier on wasn't much of a thing, which I think was a confidence thing starting out, because the three guys had been playing together and they were like, we need a drummer. So I entered the band then. So songwriting for me, I think, took a bit of time.
Right.
Just as like as a confidence thing, because, you know, for whatever reason. But as time went on, I think, like, more melodically is where I felt the strongest for ideas.
That's interesting,
like, that
for a drummer, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, my old man was a singer-songwriter.
I've got this song. So, I can't wait to play it.
So I think maybe that's where that came from there. But yeah, I think the best thing about looking back at those times, coming back to that song, is it's important to have a song where it reminds you of a time where it's just like, man, I wouldn't change anything from those times. I'm really happy that there is something in a song to remind me of that period, which is like 6 or 7 years, which was just a lot of fun.
So do you play another instrument as well, melodic instruments?
A little bit of guitar. Nothing too crazy. But yeah, guitar.
And are you a singer as well?
Yeah, sing as well.
Yeah, because your dad has a beautiful, beautiful voice.
He does.
We might as well do it now. This is so cool. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't know this. Paul O'Gorman, Matt's dad, had a one-hit wonder in the 70s. It's called Ride, Ride, America.
Bring it on.
I'm going to play it for you. I think this is a live version from Countdown.
Yeah, cool.
And he looks like you in the 70s.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
He has your beautiful blonde hair.
Yeah, he does. Nice pause there.
Born within your shadow, living on your promises, sure would be an easy ride. Like the millions before me, who proudly sang your name, their spirits raised to the sky, building the railroad.
You got to imagine as well, it's very ABBA-esque video clip.
Totally right. Just why it all began.
It's so awesome.
It's cool.
I can't believe I don't know it. But in the 70s, I was reading the YouTube comments. It's definitely a nostalgic song for people.
Yeah, people. It's funny. He used to, so afterwards, he played it a few like Carols by Candlelights and things like that. And he'd play that song and it would just go, people would go crazy for it.
Wow. So did you listen to it a lot growing up?
Oh, he wouldn't play it a lot, but you're definitely aware of it. Like people would always talk about it because it was quite a big song. You know, he did amazing things. Like he toured Japan, won songwriting contests. He played for the Pope at the MCG.
What?
Yeah, there's a photo of him playing. There's like 100,000 people. There's like the Pope there and there's Dad there with the acoustic guitar.
Was that in the 70s or more recently?
That was in the 70s, yeah.
Is he still writing music?
He's still writing music. He actually wrote a song that is on Russell Morris's album.
Oh, cool.
Recent album, yeah. So, he's just gotten back into it. So, he's come full circle.
And then what kind of influence does he have on British India music? Does he ever say like, oh, I wouldn't have written it that way?
No, he's not. But he's the guy that I would play him something and he'd give you an honest opinion without telling you.
Right, you can see it in his face.
You know what I mean? Like, I think everyone's got that confidant that they show music to.
Yeah.
And they're like, so, what do you think of this song? And he'd be like, yeah, it's good. And he'd be like, all right, that's not the best. Or you'd be like, hey, what do you think of this? And just be like, wow. Then you'd be like, okay.
All right.
That's crazy.
So, do songs ever get kicked off albums because you come and go, guys, bad news, Dad didn't like it?
No, I think we used to sit back on songs after a while and go, because sometimes you take songs in when you're recording an album and you're like, okay, this is the one. This is it. This is going to be the single. And then you record it and then you hear it back and for whatever reason, it hasn't come across like you thought it would.
Ah, what a shame.
And then there'd be a song that you've written the last minute and that turns out to be the best song. You know, you release that first as a single.
Yep. I wanted to ask you about, so to transition into you being now a radio announcer.
Yeah.
That song, Tom Cochrane, Life is a Highway, that is probably perfectly placed, I would say, between Triple M's playlist where you announce on and Gold where I work at the moment.
Yeah.
Who do you think, and I've asked the music directors of each station, who plays Tom Cochrane, Life is a Highway more? Do you think it's Triple M or Gold?
I'm going to go, this is a good one. I'm going to maybe Triple M.
Gold,
no
baby.
Way.
We got it 5 times a week versus 3 times a week on average.
What time of the days are we talking? Did we break down the stats?
I don't know. I don't know times of day. That could be a lot of like midnight to 6 a.m. Playing for truck drivers, like driving along the highway.
That's hilarious, man.
But how have you found that transition from going in, from being like drummer of a rock and roll band yep. into an announcer on radio.
Well, it's really funny. Like, my granddad used to do radio for probably about 40, 50 years at a station called 3KZ in Melbourne. And he used to do like...
I think 3KZ is gold.
Yeah.
I think the 3KZ became gold in the 90s.
See how this all crazy thing works.
So, crazy. So, what era was this?
So, this would have been 50s through to, I think, 40s, 50s. 60s, 70s, we play all your favourite hits.
But he was on air for that long, you
mean? He was on air for that long.
Wow.
And it was really cool. Like, he used to do all the pirate radio stuff as well, like get onto the ships and do interviews and come back off. But I think
what?
Yeah, so he used to do pirate radio.
So I thought pirate radio was a UK thing. I didn't even know we had it here.
So when he went overseas and did some stuff there.
Oh,
so yeah,
right.
He did a bit
of
travelling.
So the idea of pirate radio, for people who don't know, was because they didn't have licensing to play some songs or radio was essentially banned from playing certain types of rock and roll music.
Yeah.
They would go offshore into international waters on a ship and broadcast, and you could still pick up the frequency
exactly,
on the land.
So he used to do that, and he interviewed like Elizabeth Taylor and things like that. And so he had this show called The Real McCoys. And what I found-
This is in Britain or this is in Australia?
Yeah. And what was really cool about it was he used to, the idea of coming up with a full show on the day, playing it live, to a studio audience and having a band in the studio. So he would have to write content every single day to perform it at this single time. Yeah, it's called The Real McCoys. It's on YouTube, and it would be skits. So he'd be playing, three or four different characters, writing these shows.
Oh, I got to pull some of this up. Yes. That's so cool.
So writing these shows every single day with a band and with an audience. So I think that's... growing up and hearing his stories, and I always thought it was fascinating about creating something on the day and having to deliver it that day.
Yeah.
And it had to be something different every day. And, you think about like radio now, you can pre-record things and take grabs from the internet and do all that. But, he used to write skits every day and three or four different characters. And then the band had to write music, and it all had to be delivered within this one day on the time.
What's his name?
Kevin O'Gorman.
I'm going to, after this interview, I'll play it a little bit if I can find it.
It's like Mad Men stuff.
Awesome.
It's like all of that kind of.
I can't believe you've got both things in your blood, radio and music.
So I always wanted to try radio, but then, the band took off, which was great. But I always had interest in doing radio. And then when the band kind of started slowing down, I did community radio at Southern FM in Bayside for 4 or 5 years. Had a show there with a very good friend of mine. And that's how it all kind of kicked off. Always had a fascination with it and love music too.
Yeah, right. And so why, when you say the band slows down, why does a band slow down? Do you not have that rehearsal space anymore?
We don't have that rehearsal space anymore. I think we weren't, everyone, the band was slowing down, and the fact was we didn't have that rehearsal space anymore, and we weren't touring as much. So, everyone, like Dex studying a law degree, Nick, who was in the band, was doing a lot of work with his wife at the time with her business, not through not wanting to do the band, just, as you get older, other things pop up.
Yeah, sure.
And everyone was kind of going into their own area. And I think one of the good things about having a band that you've done for like 10 or 15 years is it can kind of run parallel to whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Like you can, do that on the weekends and kind of do your work, during the week.
So, are you guys still doing that? Like weekends, you'll catch up?
Yeah, weekends we'll catch up and continue to write. It just won't be the everyday thing.
Yeah. So, then do you feel, is there pressure from anybody like record company or even fans of the band to release new music? Because now, I guess it's been 3 years since the last album, and that would be the longest time in between albums. Is there a pressure to do new stuff?
I don't know. It's kind of like there's got to be the want to do it. And I think having that break now, we're in a position where everyone's kind of amped up to get back into it.
Let's kick on Tom Cochrane again at the end of the week.
Let's get the big drum fill in the middle. And that's the beauty of being in a band for so long. Like, do you have that with Hamish and Andy in a way? Like, you've done 10 or 15 years with Hamish and Andy, and you still get to do it with your best mates.
I couldn't have fallen into the better situation that as Christian O'Connell, which is the breakfast show that I work on each day, when he came to Australia was the same year that Hamish and Andy finished their 5-day week show. So,
wow.
And now they still do a podcast once a week and I'm able to still do both. Yeah. It's honestly the best of both worlds.
It's a great thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel very lucky in that sense as well.
Yeah. And I can't believe, as you pulled up today, Declan, the singer of the band, lives around the corner.
Yeah,
from me.
He's literally right around the corner here in Coburg.
The house that you pointed out, my dog actually runs around in his yard.
Yeah, he's picking up after your dog all the time.
No, I always pick up. But I think she found food in there once, like a loaf of bread. Not saying that he threw a loaf of bread out his window.
He did mention that he was missing a loaf of bread too, Jack.
But now she always sees that house and she thinks, oh, I can get food here.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. I feel like going hanging around, like walking up and down the street, waiting for him to come out and just
I can just
into
tell
him.
You where he lives if you like.
We should get him in and do like a, if I had the drums we plugged can, in, he
maybe
could play the
British
guitar.
India should record their next album in here.
Man, you guys we'll should be the first band to play, like the first real band to play music in Jackie Road Studios.
Oh, dude, don't be silly. What about a Release the Sounds gig in here?
Yeah, Mike and I have played in here before. But yeah, I want a real band to play in. Hey, one of the things that you guys did that, and you mentioned Rage earlier on and watching Song 2 on Rage, one thing that I dreamed of as a kid was getting to do the guest programming.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, every Saturday night at like 11 o'clock or midnight would be this a guest programmer on Rage where they could choose whatever video clips they wanted to play all night until 6 a.m. It was one of my favorite things to watch, and especially when a band, like I remember NoFX doing it and The Offspring doing it, and I would record it onto VHS
and
watch them again. And you guys did a Rage guest programming.
And just quickly before that, how good is it when you watch like one of your favorite bands and they nail it too?
Yeah.
You're like, this is heaven.
Well, it was that... There's that golden age, I guess, when you're an early teenager. Well, that was the age for me where you're first getting into bands. So every time you get into a new band, that opens, unlocks like another 5 bands. And
it's
that's
what
the guest programming was so good for. I remember Fat Mike from NoFX choosing all these bands that I'd never heard of. And then you go and find those bands.
Yeah. Well, what happens is they give you a book.
Mm.
It's about that thick. And they give you 50 songs. So it was easy for us. We're like... 10 songs each and then 10 songs that mean the most as a band.
Right. Yeah. Wait, so you choose 50 songs?
Yeah, 50 songs.
That's too many to play all night, isn't it?
No, 50 songs works out.
That sounds like a lot.
Nah, 50 songs.
I guess songs are only like 3 minutes long.
Yeah,
hey?
You go from midnight till 6 or 7.
Yeah.
I think.
And was it hard to choose? Because I mean, I feel like I would...
It's incredibly hard.
Yeah.
It's so difficult. You think you have it and then you're just like, you've just gone past the A's.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like, and you're like, oh, I've already got 100 songs here.
Oh, my God. So,
well, even asking you to choose a song for this, like last night you chose Tom Cochrane and then driving in this morning, you're like, last minute song change.
Yeah.
We're putting on Blur.
Exactly. So, Rage was times 100 for
awesome.
That.
I always wanted, like, the closest I feel like I'll ever come to guest programming Rage is the band that I was in with Hamish and Andy, Cool Boys and the Frontman. And I pleaded
sure
with them.
Sure, it could be arranged.
They didn't want to do it.
Really?
I pleaded with them. I was like, please, could we? It would be so funny to do guest programming Rage.
I thought that would have been a shoo-in, man.
Nah,
you guys would have been great.
I don't know. I feel like, for whatever reason, they've been asked to do it even before they were in the band. They got asked to do it and said no. And I thought they were crazy. But maybe they didn't like watch it or grow up with it and know how important it is to us.
Oh, man. If there was a way to make that happen, that would be must-see Rage.
So, Rage guest programming would have been a childhood dream of mine. Mm. And then playing at Big Day Out. I mean, for our age, that was the festival.
Yeah.
And you guys did it.
Yeah, we did it. It's we played at 11:30 in the morning the first time they asked us. And our minds were blown. I think it was Iggy Pop and White Stripes that year. And then we got to do the full tour.
Yeah.
Which was crazy because it was Rage Against the Machine.
Awesome.
Arcade Fire. Bjork. Silverchair. Yeah, it was huge.
What a lineup. So, is it how you imagine? Are you all walking around backstage and you're saying hi to Tom Morello and Daniel Johns and stuff?
Yeah, it was crazy. At a festival like that, it was literally all the bands are kind of in the same area. They'll eat in the same area. And the best thing about playing at 12 o'clock in the afternoon is
you
just hang out
afterwards.
For the rest of the day.
That's so cool. I love the look of daytime festivals.
Yeah.
Like, I reckon even though you can have all the lights and stuff by the time Rage Against the Machine come on, there's something really cool about playing in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes it can be like, it was stinking hot. Every gig we had, I remember it was just like the sun was blaring. Oh, man,
you're playing at 11:30 in the morning. The other bands are playing in the late afternoon in the hot sun.
Yeah, I know. Well, for a power guy like me, 11:30 on the Gold Coast is pretty tough.
Can't they push the drums further and further back until it's covered by the shade of the of that big dome thing?
It was so much fun, man. Like, yeah. It was the best. And we've been lucky enough to do, like, Falls, Groove in the Moo, like, most of the big ones here. And they're just so much fun. It's almost sad when they finish, especially the ones that go for, like, 6 or 7 days.
Yeah. And then what? How does a band have, like, a... What's a bad show for a band? Because on radio, I guess a bad show is like, it wasn't very funny. The callers were crap. Yeah. We didn't really vibe. Is it people playing wrong notes and stuff, or is it more of a lack of vibe thing?
I think it could be a lack of vibe. Obviously, there are probably things leading up to it. Like, we've had shows where, you know, we've made it by 5 minutes. You know, I remember-
Oh, you get there five minutes
like,
before.
I remember we were supporting Fall Out Boy and we were playing a festival in Newcastle that day. We're like, oh, can we pull off the double? We're like, yeah, bugger it. Let's just say
And where
yes.
was Fall Out Boy playing?
Festival Hall.
Oh, in Melbourne.
In Melbourne.
Right, okay.
So we're main support, Fall Out Boy, and we'd played this festival in Newcastle.
Right.
And it was a matter of-
And like, then you're not private jetting or anything. You're going to the airport.
Jetstar, baby. So it was like, if this plane is late by 20 minutes-
Yeah, which for Jetstar is a 70% chance.
So we got on the plane and it was just like- For whatever reason, we had to circle. We're like, oh, my God, there's one song we got to cut out, two songs, three songs.
Oh, no.
But we had this plan, just in case this happened, was that we rented...
Well, you would swap with Fall Out Boy. Fall Out Boy play first, British India play second.
We hired guitars and drums at Festival Hall, just in case we were cutting it so fine that we had to leave straight from the plane, get in a car and go straight to the gig.
Without your own gear.
And just leave it at the airport and call up Jetstar and go, hey, we accidentally, which is what we did. Our manager was in the car as we were jetting down to Festival Hall. He goes, yeah, g'day. We've accidentally left, he's English. He's like, we've accidentally left some gear at the airport. They're like, oh, okay. Just a couple of bags. He goes, four guitars, cymbals, snare, lead bag, mic. So we left 13 things and went straight to Festival Hall.
And then is it hard to play without your instruments? Does it feel weird?
Well, people in the industry will know this. We don't use our own backline. So what does that mean?
Backline is the amps and stuff?
Amps and drums.
Right.
So one of the reasons why kind of we've done it so well touring-wise is that we don't use our own gear. So everywhere we go regionally, we use the support band's gear. So a drum kit, right. I'll take a snare and cymbals and play, just set up on that drum kit, which can be strange sometimes. We played in Albury
once. So every night you've got a different piece of equipment?
Every night.
Right.
Playing through different amps.
Yeah. What happened in Albury?
Well, I rolled up on the drum kit and there was a keyboard set up. So I've gone to put my cymbals on and there was just a snare and two keyboards. And I'm
what do you mean?
Well, the drummer had a couple of keyboards on the drum kit, which you don't expect. And
was he using them as drum sounds or he used his...
Yeah, so he was hitting it with that and he was just giving it the, you know, the floaties as well.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, weird things like that happen. But generally, you know, all backline sounds the same. If you're a good enough band, then, you know, you'll pull a sound out of what you're using.
So when choosing a support band, do you ring a band and go like, hey, you can be our support band, but... You have to let us use your instruments.
Yeah, and you got to think about it, man. Like, most bands in regional towns are happy to play shows.
Oh, and so you're getting a new band at every locally everywhere you go.
Yeah, we like to support the local bands as well. And also, as a band, like, for people who have gone and watched, there's nothing worse as a support band than having to set up in front of the main band.
Oh, like, yeah. That's,
you know what I mean?
Like, that's weird.
When you're a band, you want to feel like it's your night too.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you can see it's like, oh, the real band is behind us and we're
at the
front.
You know, with like the curtained off kit and all that kind of stuff. And it's no fun when you're the support band, you've got to play in a line for 20 minutes. So we're kind of like, well, we want them to feel just as much as part of it. So set up on the big drum riser, have your thing and we'll just come in and... Borrow your gear.
And then do you ever like break a stick or like break a skin head on the drums?
Yeah. We've had things like that. Like they're things that make a bad gig.
Yeah.
When things go wrong out of your control, like you know, an amp will blow up.
Yeah. And then what's the deal with the support band? Like, oh, just that's bad luck for you. We're never coming through Shepparton again.
They feel terrible because they've been building up this gig for so long and then something goes wrong. So we're like, we'll pay for it to get fixed. You know, right. We're sorry about that. But, yep. You know, gigs going wrong, most of the time, things out of your control.
All right. And then let's finish with the Rolling Stones. Yep. You've supported the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. So, we found out they were coming a while before they were here. So, generally, what happens is if there's a big band coming to town, if you're affiliated with, you know, the touring company or the record label, you've got more of a chance of supporting them just for the fact that you're in that bubble.
Yep.
And they want a band on their label supporting the international band. So, I think there are about 6 or 7 bands that were in contention to support the Stones when they came out. And we're just like, we're never going to get it. And then our manager called us. He's like, you can't tell anyone. You've got the support for the Stones in Melbourne and Sydney. So, we're blown away. And we'd heard through the grapevine that they don't, you know, generally introduce themselves as a support bands. We've heard. And we're kind of sitting backstage. It was really cool, man. It was literally everything you'd imagine. There was like a huge bus with all their family and stuff that would just travel around with them. It's a massive setup. We finished playing and we're like, how good's this? And then this English guy knocks on this door. Like, picture the Rolling Stones tour manager, silver fox, long ponytail. Yeah. It's like, yeah, g'day, lads. You want to meet the Stones? We're like, yeah, sure, I guess. All right, be here then at this time. So, we're like, oh, my God, okay, cool. So, we're standing there and we kind of walk you up and this, like, publicist for them's there, like this lady, and she's like, all right, if you want to meet the Stones, you've got to look sharp kind of thing. So, we're literally standing there. She's like, what? Adjusting what we're doing. She's like, you've got to put that beer down.
They're a rock and roll band. What are they worried?
Wow, you've got to look sharp to meet the Stones, apparently. So, they're like, okay, this is what you can do. Yeah. I need your phones. Unfortunately, it's just the band members, no management. And our manager was gutted because he was a huge fan. And there were like these gaffer tape markings that we had to stand on.
Are you in a dressing room?
So, there's like a walkway from when the band come from their dressing room. So, like this walkway to the stage.
Yeah.
And we were just standing, you know, on the way.
Oh, right.
And so...
So, they're not even stopping. They're just walking past.
So, we didn't really know. Yeah. We were kind of standing there for 10 minutes. It's like, what the hell's going on? And so, anyway, you know, the Bobby Keys saxophone player walks past, all the singers.
Yeah.
And then, like, the Stones appear. And it's just like this moment, which is crazy. It's like Mick, Keith, Charlie, Ronnie. And so, we're kind of standing there and I'm on one end and Mick Jagger's on the other end. And we're about to get this photo taken. And then I just hear this voice going, I might go stand next to the tall blonde fellow. And I was like, who said that? And I look over and Mick Jagger's just like walking over.
Oh, awesome.
And like standing next to me. I'm just like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Just play cool.
Wait, are you allowed to shake his hand or is it?
We did at the start. Yeah, and they're right. Like kind of say, he's standing next to me. And he's just like, don't say anything stupid. Just play it cool. So, I'm just standing there like, and then he just goes, so, do you think the weather's going to hold out then? Because it was quite overcast. And I'm just like, What do I say? Just about to reply. And they'd already walked off to see the preachers. So that was my moment.
So
with
you never actually said anything.
No, I never actually said anything and completely froze. So we've got this photo
of you trying to think of what to say about the weather.
Literally looking up into the air, going, play it cool. But for some reason, we weren't allowed to put it online. I think there might have been a couple of photos that they had that maybe they weren't happy with, so they've got to approve photos.
Yeah, maybe you weren't dressed sharp enough.
I think that's right. There was a top button undone that the publicist missed.
That's awesome, Matty. All right. Well, let's, in true British India style, let's go out today with Life is a Highway, like it's the end of the week. But thank you so much for coming into Jackie Road Studios.
Thanks for having me, man. I'll be there when the light comes in.
That is Matty O'Gorman from British India. I really had fun having Matty in Jackie Road Studios and he chose 2 awesome songs. I really have been listening to that song and appreciating it more. Life is a Highway. I always felt like it was one of those songs that was just on the radio and background noise, but Matty really brought it to the front for me and I got to play, I'm playing this bit one more time. That scream he does in the background is awesome. I'm going to make it... Actually, let's start the talking points here.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
first talking point, email me, jackierodestudios@gmail.com. If you live for certain moments in songs like this, I'm not talking about a whole song or even a whole chorus, just you live for little bits like the scream in this. Here. I love that. I've got another one, actually, another example. I'm just going to pause while I find it. This song by NoFX is called Dinosaurs Will Die. It starts like this.
Kick back, watch it crumble.
And that riff plays a couple of times through the song. And then, like, three quarters of the way through the song, they go back to that riff again, and just for one time only, they play it so it actually sounds wrong. But when you know it, I start to anticipate it every time. Have a listen to this.
You are sadly mistaken.
I love that so much. So let me just play them back to back. The first one that plays several times during the song. And then the one where I anticipate, and when we're getting closer to it, I'm like, it's coming, the different one's coming.
Mistaken.
Love it, love it, love it. Okay, so first question on the talking points this week, jackierodestudios@gmail.com. What is the part in a song that you just live for like that? If you could link me the YouTube and even time code it, I'll play it on the show in the next making of episode. It can be anything. I don't care how small it is. Send it in. Then the other thing I love that Maddie was talking about was Rage. It was such a huge video clip show for me when I was growing up. And then on Saturday nights, this idea of guest programming Rage, where bands who were touring Australia would come in and they would play their own choices in songs all night. Who do you remember watching guest programming Rage? Did you tape it? Did you watch it over and over again? But tell me, who do you remember watching on Rage guest programming? And to finish up today, I loved hearing the stories behind the scenes of a real touring band from Maddie in British India. I had no idea that they would pick support bands and then tell support bands, hey, we're going to use your equipment.
One of the reasons why kind of we've done it so well touring-wise is that we don't use our own gear. So everywhere we go regionally, we use the support band's gear.
That's what I wrote this week's song about. I guess it's from the perspective of British India's tour manager calling a local support band and saying, hey, British India want you to be their support act. But it comes with an asterisk on the end. This is called the British India song. It's Jackie Road Studios.
Oh, British India are rolling into town. They need a support band and they're looking around for a band like yours. Position. There's just one condition. British India didn't bring a guitar, so they'll need your drums and they'll need your amps. If you don't let them have your instruments, we'll have to find another band. Well, I don't think I need to say this is a great opportunity for your band. British India, they really so take up your shoes, and if you choose not to give them to the band, then understand, we gotta find another band. British India like the look of your clothes, they wanna wear your clothes at their own shows. So take off your shirt, take off your pants, or we'll look for other bands. Well, I don't think I need to say this is a great. Try to book a hotel, but they're all booked out. Couldn't you make up a bed on the couch? Well, actually, British India have bad backs, and sleeping on the couch ain't good for that. If they're not lying perfectly flat, they're doomed. They're better off sleeping in your room. So strip the sheets and make the bed. Of Milo, and please pop up their pillow. Can you tuck them in and make sure after you put their jammies on. And British India would like a kiss on the head. They want to hear a story before going to bed. And sometimes they can get a little scared. So could you